Chapter 23. Nathaniel Letton was talking when the door opened. He ceased, and with his two companions gazed with controlled perturbation at burning daylight striding into the room. The free, swinging movements of the trail traveler were unconsciously exaggerated in that stride of his. In truth, it seemed to him that he felt the trail beneath his feet. "Howdy, gentlemen, howdy," he remarked, ignoring the unnatural calm with which they greeted his entrance. He shook hands with them in turn, striding from one to another and gripping their hands so heartily that Nathaniel Letton could not forbear to wince. Daylight flung himself into a massive chair and sprawled lazily, with an appearance of fatigue. The leather grip he had brought into the room he dropped carelessly beside him on the floor. "Godly mighty, but I've sure been going some," he sighed. "He sure trimmed them beautiful. It was real slick. And the beauty of the play never dawned on me till the very end. It was pure and simple knockdown and drag out. And the way they fell for it was amazing." The geniality in his lazy western drawlery assured them. He was not so formidable, after all. Despite the act that he had effected an entrance in the face of Letton's instructions to the outer office, he showed no indication of making a scene or playing rough. "Well," Daylight demanded good-humoredly, "ain't you all got a good word for your partner? Or has his sure enough brilliance plumb dazzled you all?" Letton made a dry sound in his throat. Dosett sat quietly and waited, while Leon Guggenheimer struggled into articulation. "You have certainly raised Cain," he said. Daylight's black eyes flashed in a pleased way. "Didn't I, though," he proclaimed jubilantly. "And he didn't we fool him. I was totally surprised. I never dreamed they would be that easy. And now," he went on, not permitting the pause to grow awkward, "we all might as well have an accounting. I'm pulling west this afternoon on that blame 20th century." He tugged at his grip, got it open, and dipped into it with both his hands. "Don't forget, boys, when you all want me to earn Swaggle Wall Street another flutter, all you all have to do is whisper the word. I'll sure be right there with the goods." His hands emerged, clutching a great mass of stubs, checkbooks, and broker's receipts. These he deposited in a heap on the big table, and dipping again, he fished out the stragglers, and added them to the pile. He consulted a slip of paper, drawn from his coat pocket, and read aloud. $10,027,042.68 is my figuring on my expenses. Of course that all's taken from the winnings, before we all get to figuring on the whack-up. Where's your figures? It must have been a godly mighty big cleanup." The three men looked their bepuzzlement at one another. The man was a bigger fool than they had imagined, or else he was playing a game which they could not divine. Nathaniel Letton moistened his lips and spoke up. "It will take some hours yet, Mr. Harnish, before the full accounting can be made. Mr. Hoson is at work upon it now. As you say, it has been a gratifying cleanup. Suppose we have lunch together and talk it over. I'll have the clerks work through the noon hour, so that you will have ample time to catch your train." Dosett and Guggenheimer manifested a relief that was almost obvious. The situation was clearing. It was disconcerting, under the circumstances, to be pent in the same room with this heavy-muscled, Indian-like man whom they had robbed. They remembered unpleasantly the many stories of his strength and recklessness. If Letton could only put him off long enough for them to escape into the police world outside the office door, all would be well, and Daylight showed all the signs of being put off. "I'm real glad to hear that," he said. "Don't want to miss that train, and you all have done me proud, gentlemen, letting me in on this deal. I just do appreciate it without being able to express my feelings. But I am sure almighty curious, and I'd like terrible to know, Mr. Letton, what your figures of our winning is. Can you all give me a rough estimate?" Nathaniel Letton did not look appealingly at his two friends, but in the brief pause they felt that appeal pass out from him. Dosit, of sterner mold than the others, began to divine that the Klondiker was playing. But the other two were still older, the blandishment of his childlike innocence. It is extremely difficult, Leon Guggenheimer began. You see, Wart Valley has fluctuated so, that no estimate can possibly be made in advance, Letton supplemented. Approximated, Daylight counseled cheerfully. It don't hurt, if you all are a million or so out one side or the other. The figures'll straighten that up. But I'm that curious I'm just itching all over. What do you say? Why continue to play at cross purposes? Dosit demanded abruptly and coldly. Let us have the explanation here and now. Mr. Harnish is laboring under a false impression, and he should be set straight. In this deal, but Daylight interrupted. He had played too much poker to be unaware or unappreciative of the psychological factor, and he headed Dosit off in order to play the denouncement of the present game in his own way. Speaking of deals, he said, reminds me of a poker game I once seen in Reno, Nevada. It wasn't what you all would call a square game. They all was 10 horns that sat in. But they was a tenderfoot short horns they all are called out there. He stands behind the dealer, and sees that same dealer give Hissel 4 aces off in the bottom of the deck. The tenderfoot is sure shocked. He slides around to the player facing the dealer across the table. Say, apostrophe he whispers, I seen the dealer deal Hissel 4 aces. Apostrophe, well, and what of it? Says the player. I'm trying to tell you all, because I thought you all ought to know, apostrophe says the tenderfoot. I tell you all I seen him deal Hissel 4 aces. Apostrophe, say, mister, apostrophe says the player, you all had better get out of here. You all don't understand the game. It's his deal, ain't it? Apostrophe, the laughter that greeted his story was hollow and perfunctory, but Daylight appeared not to notice it. Your story has some meaning, I suppose, Dosit said pointedly. Daylight looked at him innocently, and did not reply. He turned jovially to Nathaniel Letton. Fire away, he said. I've us an approximation of our winning. As I said before, a million out one way or the other won't matter, it's bound to be such an almighty big winning. By this time Letton was stiffened by the attitude Dosit had taken, and his answer was prompt and definite. I fear you are under a misapprehension, Mr. Harnish. There are no winnings to be divided with you. Now don't get excited, I beg of you. I have but to press this button. Far from excited, Daylight had all the seeming of being stunned. He felt absently in his vest pocket for a match, lighted it, and discovered that he had no cigarette. The three men watched him with the tense closeness of cats. Now that it had come, they knew that they had a nasty few minutes before them. Do you all mind saying that over again? Daylight said. Seems to me, I ain't got it just exactly right. You all said? He hung with painful expectancy on Nathaniel Letton's utterance. I said you were under a misapprehension, Mr. Harnish, that was all. You have been stock gambling, and you have been hard hit. But neither Wart Valley, nor I, nor my associates, feel that we owe you anything. Daylight pointed at the heap of receipts and stubs on the table. That all represents $10,027,042.68, hard cash. Ain't it good for anything here? Letton smiled and shrugged his shoulders. Daylight looked at Dosit and murmured. I guess that story of mine had some meaning, after all. He laughed in a sickly fashion. T was your deal all right, and you all told him right too. Well, I ain't kicking. I'm like the player in that poker game. It was your deal, and you all had a right to do your best. And you D1 it cleaned me out slicker than a whistle. He gazed at the heap on the table with an air of stupefaction. And that all ain't worth the paper it's written on. Gold asked it, you all can sure deal 'em round, when you get a chance. Oh, no, I ain't a kicking. It was your deal, and you all certainly done me, and a man ain't half a man that squeals on another man's deal. And now the hand is played out, and the cards are on the table, and the deal's over, but... Dot, his hand, dipping swiftly into his inside breast pocket, appeared with the big Colt's automatic. As I was saying, the old deal's finished. Now it's my deal, and I'm going to see if I can hold them four aces dash. Take your hand away, you whited sepulcher, he cried sharply. Nathaniel Letton's hand, creeping toward the push button on the desk, was abruptly arrested. Change chairs, Daylight commanded. Ache that chair over there, you gangrene-livered skunk. Jump. By God. Or I'll make you leak till folks'll think your father was a water hydrant, and your mother a sprinkling cart. You all move your chair alongside, Guggenheimer. And you all dose it, sit right there, while I just irrelevantly explain the virtues of this here automatic. She's loaded for big game, and she goes off 8 times. She's a sure hummer when she gets started. Preliminary remarks being over, I now proceed to deal. Remember, I ain't making no remarks about your deal. You done your darndest, and it was all right. But this is my deal, and it's up to me to do my darndest. In the first place, you all know me. I'm Burning Daylight, savvy? Ain't afraid of God, devil, death, nor destruction. Them's my four aces, and they sure copper your bets. Look at that there living skeleton. Letton, you're sure afraid to die. Your bones is all rattling together, you're that scared. And look at that fat Jew there. This little weapon's sure put the fear of God in his heart. He's yellow as a sick persimmon. Dose it, you're a cool one. You all ain't batted an eye, nor turned a hair. That's because you're great on arithmetic. And that makes you all dead easy in this deal of mine. You're sitting there and adding two and two together, and you all know I sure got you skinned. You know me, and that I ain't afraid of nothing. And you all adds up all your money, and knows you ain't a-going to die, if you can help it. I'll see you hanged, was Dosit's retort. Not by a damn sight. When the fun starts, you're the first I plug. I'll hang all right, but you all won't live to see it. You all die here and now, while I'll die subject to the law's delay, savvy? Being dead, with grass growing out of your carcasses, you won't know when I hang, but I'll sure have the pleasure a long time of knowing you all beat me to it. Daylight paused. You surely wouldn't kill us? Letton asked in a queer, thin voice. Daylight shook his head. It's sure too expensive. You all ain't worth it. I'd sooner have my chips back. And I guess you all would sooner give my chips back than go to the dead house. A long silence followed. Well, I've done dealt. It's up to you all to play. But while you're deliberating, I want to give you all a warning. If that door opens and any one of you cusses lets on there's anything unusual, right here and then I sure start plugging. They ain't a soul'll get out the room except feet first. A long session of 3 hours followed. The deciding factor was not the big automatic pistol, but the certitude that Daylight would use it. Not alone were the three men convinced of this, but Daylight himself was convinced. He was firmly resolved to kill the men if his money was not forthcoming. It was not an easy matter, on the spur of the moment, to raise 10 millions in paper currency, and there were vexatious delays. A dozen times Mr. Hoson and the head clerk were summoned into the room. On these occasions the pistol lay on Daylight's lap, covered carelessly by a newspaper, while he was usually engaged in rolling or lighting his brown paper cigarettes. But in the end, the thing was accomplished. A suitcase was brought up by one of the clerks from the waiting motor car, and Daylight snapped it shut on the last package of bills. He paused at the door to make his final remarks. There's three several things I sure want to tell you all. When I get outside this door, you all will be set free to act, and I just want to warn you all about what to do. In the first place, no warrants for my arrest, savvy? This money's mine, and I ain't robbed you of it. If it gets out how you gave me the double cross, and how I done you back again, the laugh'll be on you, and it'll sure be an almighty big laugh. You all can't afford that laugh. Besides, having got back my stake, that you all robbed me of. If you arrest me and try to rob me a second time, I'll go gunning for you all, and I'll sure get you. No little fraid cat shrimps like you all can skin burning daylight. If you win, you lose, and there'll sure be some several unexpected funerals around this. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.